Welcome to the Out of Space podcast, hosted by me, Kathy Lomax, featuring artists from Across Spaces Studios in conversation with writers, critics and art professionals, offering a closer look into what happens behind closed studio doors. Over the next 8 episodes, we will be exploring the theme of care from multiple viewpoints, ranging from artists and parenthood to caring about the community and about the work itself. This series was recorded remotely in order to adhere to social distancing rules, and there may be variations in sound quality. Out of Space, a podcast by Space Studios. This episode of Out of Space's Care series is all about taking care of business, or TCB, a phrase that I've swiped from Elvis Presley, who used to present pieces of TCB jewellery to his entourage when he was in a good mood. As for TCB and artists, I'm thinking about all those elements of admin that we put off, but are a vital part of developing our careers, and in some cases protecting our livelihoods. So that is applying for funding, keeping records of artworks and sales, entering competitions, having the correct insurance, corresponding with galleries, curators and collectors, joining arts organisations, maybe even organising your own exhibitions. To discuss this important topic, I'm delighted to welcome two guests, Roman Sadani and Julie Lomax. Hi.
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 Hello.
Julie Lomax is the CEO of AN Artists Information Company, which is the largest membership organisation in the UK for visual artists, with over 21,000 members. She's previously held senior positions at Liverpool Biennial, the Australia Council for the Arts, and Arts Council England. Julie was a commissioner for the 4th Plinth Contemporary Art Project in Trafalgar Square, artworks in the Olympic Park, and on the Advisory Committee for Art on the Underground. She's been a judge for the Threadneedle Painting Prize and the Concord Art Prize. Julie originally trained as an artist, graduating from Chelsea School of Art with a degree in fine art. And alongside her role at AN, she's currently the chair of the showroom and an executive committee member of the Association of Women in the Arts. Roman Sadani is a London-based Iraqi multidisciplinary artist. She was born in Yemen in 1995, and graduated from the Slade School of Fine Art in 2018. Her moving image work often features narratives that are driven by a search for an exit, in which she traces the physical toll of this constant search, as well as the negotiation between the individual and the collective. Recent screenings and group exhibitions include Arab Women Film Festival, Rio de Janeiro 2021, Modern Mondays, MoMA New York 2021, Independent Iraqi Film Festival London in 2020, and Soundings at Raven Row London in 2019. In 2020, Roman won a prestigious Gerwood FVU Award, and in February 2021, she was the recipient of a Space Artist Award. Phew, got all that out. Thank you. What great biogs. You've done some brilliant things, both of you. So, I'd like to start off by finding out a bit more about what you both do. Julie, I know that you trained as an artist, so I just wondered how, you know, briefly, if you could tell us how you came to kind of switch to the other side, as it were, so working for art organisations.
I think there's no brief way of describing how I went from graduating at Chelsea School of Art through to being the CEO of AN, the Artists Information Company. The one thread that links those two things together actually is AN. So when I was at art school, I used to go to the library and look at what was called then Artist Newsletter. And it was an actual newsletter with listings and information. And generally as well, articles and information about artists that you didn't really see in the mainstream art world, but the art world was very small then in the 80s. And yes, so, you know, lots of things happened in between. Again, as I've said, it's been a long and winding journey. But however, one of the things that's always been central in all of the work that I've done, whether that's been in community arts through to fundraising for the arts, but also not just fundraising, but actually giving away money as well to artists, is artists have really been central in every single job that I've done. And I think that's the other kind of golden thread through this. And I think actually training as an artist gave me a lot more insight when I was actually on the other side and giving artist grants, because I understood those years post art school and all the different things that you have to do to keep your practice together. Or in my actual example, I stopped practicing art and went and worked in the arts. And so I do have a kind of, I do have an empathy actually with artists.
Yeah. I was really thinking that I was going to ask you more about that, about how training as an artist obviously made you have that empathy, and you just seem to be such an advocate of artists. So I think that's really, really great to have you in these wonderful positions of being able to fund artists and, you know, be so involved with their careers, and to have that background and knowledge of what it means to be an artist is so great. So Roman, I wondered if I could ask you a bit more about your practice. I sort of said a little bit in the intro, but have you always been a filmmaker, and how did your practice develop while you were at the Slade? And also maybe just a little bit about the Gerwood Award that you received.
Mm-hmm. So I used to paint, I used to make sculptures just before I went to the Slade. So my family is originally from Iraq. In 2014, you know, ISIS went into Mosul, the city that my parents come from. And I think that was a very threatening moment for me, even though I grew up outside Iraq. I just felt very threatened by the events that were happening, because we still had family there. And I think from that point, I just felt very detached from my paintings, from the sculptures, and I kind of found, you know, power and strength through literally just holding a camera and documenting everything that was happening around me. So that was the summer before I joined Slade. And then I guess when I went to Slade, I had the opportunity to experiment, to deconstruct what film means for me, because at the end of the day, you know, film consists of images, movement, language, sound. There's so many elements, you know, to work with and to experiment with. And from there, I guess I chose to work within moving image. I'm not like a traditional filmmaker. But then that also like caused issues for me, because when I graduated, I ended up becoming part of like a small collective of Iraqi filmmakers based in Europe. And we traveled, you know, to different film festivals to do kind of like script development workshops. And there, I think there was a clash for me between art language and film language. It's a completely different approach. And I guess a few filmmakers, you know, kind of rely on a formula on how to develop a film. And I think that clash was a little, I think at the time I was a little bit scared by that clash, because it, for me, it was a point where I had to decide whether I continue, I guess, within the art scene, or whether I switch to film and develop more knowledge there. And I guess I was very lucky, because during that time where I was reluctant and I was unsure what to do, I won the Gerwood FVU Award. And I think that was for me a reminder that I can kind of maybe enjoy being between those two different spaces, between art and film. And that was an incredible award, because it meant that all of a sudden I had a big budget to work with. I could work with, you know, bigger teams, which was very different from my work at Slade. So yeah, that was a very important, I guess, turning point for me.
I think the awards in the art world, I mean, I guess in any profession you're in, but it's just always feels so amazing. The few things that I've won, I mean, my time as an artist, you go through periods where you're very I don't know, you feel very isolated maybe, and you're very unsure about what you're doing. And to have those kind of affirmations are just so amazing. It's just such a boost, isn't it, to your to your career. I think it comes as a surprise to lots of people when they leave art school, or however they've arrived at being an artist, that so much time of is taken up by actually non-art making, if you like, by all the other things that we need to do. And so this is what I really want to go into in a bit of detail now. And just that idea of how you create a sustainable practice, I guess, and how all these other activities are very much part of it. Do you think that, I guess, maybe I'll ask Julie first, do you think that in general art schools prepare artists enough for being working artists?
Well, it's interesting because when I was at art school, it was a definite no. We basically, in that last term, had one session with a career advisor who actually, in the old Chelsea Art School on the King's Road, was in the perch right at the top of the building. And you went in and you were basically said, these are the types of jobs you can get. And they were things like, you know, an invigilator in a gallery, or perhaps you might think about, you know, another type of job altogether, because you weren't necessarily going to make it as an artist. It was said in a much nicer and politer way than that. But actually, I thought that we had got much further than that. But interestingly, I popped into a couple of exhibitions last week, and I was talking to a gallery assistant in one of the galleries, a commercial gallery. And we just got chatting because it was a really great show. And she was talking to me about how she'd studied some of these artists when she was at art school. Then we got chatting about AN, and she was a member, which was great. She was working 4 days a week in the gallery and one day on her practice. And I actually asked her about her experience at art school. And, you know, the fact that actually the art school that she went to was one of our university partners. And she told me that she had no idea when she was actually at art school that she could be a free member of AN. All of our university partners, we give free membership to all of the students. And also that we hadn't been in to do the talk, the professional development talk that I do to many universities, which is actually just called, you know, everything I wish I'd known before I left art school. Because as I've said, my experience was slightly different. And so I'd like to think that it's improved. And we do have a lot of connections and partnerships with universities, and universities absolutely take advantage of what we can offer at AN in terms of that professional development, and in terms of preparing graduates to get out there and be in the art world and to practice. But in reality, that's not always happening. But in general, my experience of art schools is they are really keen on that side of the professional development. So there's a bit more, but probably not as much more. And also in some ways, there's not, if there is some professional development, it's perhaps not as real as the kind of story that I would tell in that seminar. I mean, I actually even say, Kathy, which I think is quite important, I actually ask the students how much time they spend watching TV or on social media, because they need to carve out at least 7 hours a week for all that stuff that you've just talked about.
Yeah. And visiting other galleries and kind of seeing how the art world works, I think, is really important, isn't it? Because
definitely.
I do a little bit of that kind of professional development myself, usually talking about running, you know, an artist run space and magazines that I do and things. And I find that so many students don't really know the difference between the different types of galleries. I mean, I guess, you know, it's not easy. It's not really easy to write it down, because there are so many different variations. But I think it's just by visiting and kind of getting that experience that you start to work out a little bit how the art world works and navigate it. What was your experience, Roman? Were you really encouraged to apply for funding and different competitions and things at the Slade? How did it work?
I graduated in 2018, and it's similar, like in the last year, I guess, of Slade, we started to have kind of career development sessions. And I mean, they were, I mean, I don't know how, if things changed now, but at the time, you know, we were learning how to write an artist CV and things like that. But I think, like, in terms of the reality of how the art scene works, of how to, I don't know, decide on like your fees as an artist, if you get commissioned, like none of this is discussed, or even like joining unions. I mean, there are many like things that need to be discussed at that stage, but none of this happened. It was like a basic kind of career development, I guess, program. In terms of being encouraged to apply for funds, I mean, yes, and Slade has a good kind of mailing list where, like, whenever, like, there are opportunities or things, they circulate it. But again, in terms of kind of, like, sitting with artists and talking to them about how to apply and what different organizations can do, that doesn't happen. And what happens is that a lot of people graduate, they feel absolutely lonely, they're unsure how to survive. Some of them, you know, my year, a lot of people ended up moving outside London because, you know, it meant that they could afford to pay for studios and work maybe like a part-time job. Anyhow, like all of this complicated life, I guess, that comes after art school is nothing that art school prepares you for.
Yeah, and maybe it would be hard for it to completely prepare you, I guess. But it does feel that maybe there is more. There is more somehow that art school could do. But I guess also artists have to have that that sort of feeling that they really want to do it and they want to learn more and they want to prepare. So it's like a bit of both. It's interesting that you mentioned, you know, artists leaving art school and kind of feeling isolated. I mean, I know that when you're at art school, obviously you have that amazing community around you and the structure. So I think that is something that people do maybe struggle with when they graduate, that suddenly they're just out on their own. And I know personally, when I had that feeling, I thought, well, I better start my own gallery, because if I don't do that, I don't think I'm ever going to meet anybody. And that was my main kind of reason to do it. I didn't really have any long-term plan. Do you have a kind of strategy, Roman, I wonder, for your career? Do you sort of think, well, I want to do this and this and this, or is it just something which is developing more organically?
I think it's developing more organically, because what happened with me after art school, I wanted to stay in London. I kind of accepted a job. It became a full-time job, which meant like for a year I couldn't make art because I was just thinking of survival. In terms of strategy, no, to be fair, I mean, at the moment, I think after the Gerwood experience, I think I'm more focused on applying for grants and funds, because again, like my process is a little bit different. I need to do research and then apply for production funds. So it's a little bit different maybe from a studio artist. But at the moment during the pandemic, I was really lucky to meet a few people from a film collective called Habibi Collective that's aimed at showcasing women filmmakers from the Swana region. And that was really important, you know, to become part of a collective, to feel like you're part of a community, because I guess as artists, we're all, you know, working on different subject matter. We come from different backgrounds. Maybe we have different concerns. And as you said, you know, that loneliness, I guess, after art school is really difficult unless you're part of a group or a wider community that shares maybe some of your rhetoric or some of your interests. And I'm finding this highly, highly valuable in terms of support, solidarity, and just feeling like you're part of something.
Yeah, I think that the group and the community is a very important part of a very important thing for many artists to make them feel connected. And then and also joining arts organisations, which I guess brings us to AN. And I know that that is such a important way of connecting for so many people with what's going on. I wonder if you have any particular thoughts on this, on joining communities and being part of communities of artists, Julie?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I always say as well when I'm doing talks with artists, that it is about finding community, because, you know, what starts in the studio as mostly a solo creative practice is actually reliant on connections and relationships. And so it's really important that not only do you find your community of where you are, whether you're based in London or outside London, wherever you are, you need to find community. And what we've been doing at AN is we have a number of programs that help our members with that. So we have a program called Assembly, where we appoint a lead artist in a particular community. They're usually, like you have started their own gallery, or they're running studios, or they've got an artist-led space, a small space. And then what we do is we ask that artist to then create a session. And they were all obviously live. And then, of course, with COVID-19, we had to stop Assembly as a live program. But we're bringing it back online, literally as live and online, as a hybrid program this September. And the importance of that is people then can network in that community. So we've done them everywhere. We've done them from, you know, Margate to Dundee, you know, across Swansea, etc., across the UK. And they're really important, because I think if you can find your community where you are, and that you can feel that you've got a network, and you can, you know, as you said, Raman, you know, feel that solidarity, feel that you are supported by your peers in that locality, or actually in a could be an online community of interest. It does help you, and it helps you with your practice. And what I've found is artists are very generous, and they will help out other artists. And we really have found that through the program. And then the next layer of that program is something called Artist Networks, where it is literally that, where we don't just go in, do one event, and then move on to another locality, that we then provide funds for that network to then continue to exist, and so continue to support each other. Because, you know, artist helping artist is actually, you know, at the core of AN. It was set up by artists, and its mission statement was, it wasn't really an mission statement in those days, it was in support of the artist. So we just continue that work, but through different means.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that sort of almost like a romantic idea of the isolated artist, or the outsider artist producing this unique work without any outside influence, is actually quite harmful in lots of ways, because the way that I think that ideas develop and spread is by that contact with other artists, and to you know, obviously it's, you have to be in the studio or wherever you make your work at some point, but then getting out and seeing what's going on around you in the world, and being exposed to all this other art, is just so nourishing to a practice. It's really, really important. I wonder what, if you have any thoughts, either of you, on artist residencies. I mean, in this sort of big list of things that artists can apply for, you know, different sort of opportunities and funding and various things. What about residencies? Is that something you've ever done, Raman?
Not really. And again, I think because of my model of working, I don't think residencies always work for me, because I mean, this kind of model of spending 1 month or 2 months and then having to produce something doesn't always work for me. But again, this doesn't mean that I wouldn't apply in the future. I think they can be really helpful in terms of networking, meeting people. I mean, you often meet international artists sometimes, so it can be really beneficial for people. But I think it does depend a little bit on your practice and your model of working.
I think that's a good point, that maybe if there's too much pressure from the residency to produce a kind of finished piece of work in whatever the time is, a month or 2 months, then that can be quite hard. Have you ever encountered anything in particular, Julie, about residencies that
When I was at the Australia Council for the Arts, I was the Director of Visual Arts there. We actually had an international residency program that I managed, and this was residencies across the globe for Australian artists. But we were very, and they were all very different, actually. And one in Barcelona was very much the self-directed residency. The artist basically got an apartment, and really amazing apartment where they could work, but also it was big enough for a family, and that was very important. And so we had, as I said, this range of residencies, some that were more multi-art forms, so that you could work with other artists in different disciplines, through to very supported residencies, and then self-directed residencies. And the main important thing that I think that we did at the Australia Council, which often artists don't think about when they're actually applying for residencies, is we put in a package of support that was around the residency. So asking artists, you know, what do you actually want to get out of it? Sometimes it's not really even making work, as Roman said. It's about building those networks, researching. You know, there are amazing collections across the world. A lot of artists would apply for those residencies because they wanted to visit a particular collection. Now, obviously, there was the tyranny of distance when you're in Australia, but they may want to go to Paris and do the residency there because they wanted to go and research and look at all the amazing collections in Paris. And then also, you know, did the artists want to meet curators so we could, you know, put them into a network in those different cities across the world? Do they want to make work in progress? Do they want to show work in progress? And so again, with that program, it was both bespoke, but also in some cases very structured through to, here's a space, do what you want. So what I would say as a tip for all artists that want to apply for residencies is, because I do think they're really important for creative development and building networks, is to really research residency programs, but also know what you want to get out of it and timing. And the very practical thing is, don't forget that you will still have costs at your location. So you've still got your rent to pay, you've still got your studio rent to pay, etc. You know, that electricity bill is still going to come whether you're in your apartment or not, or your shared house. So you have to think about the affordability. And a really good place to look at residencies and the different types across the world is the Res Artis website. And in fact,
write that down.
Yeah, it's one of the best, really. It won't give you the absolute in-depth knowledge, but it gives a real overview of all the different residencies across the world. But absolutely on top of that, you need to do your research and define what you want out of it and look at timing. You know, if you wanted to go and see a particular collection, for instance, you know, make sure, or a particular show, you know, make sure it's timed. I mean, I used to spend a lot of my time, and my team did in Australia, working out when artists should go to the different residencies. You know, it was a lot of administration work, because sometimes it's better, there are better times.
Yeah, I was at the British School at Rome a few years ago, and there were a couple of Australian artists there. So that kind of really, I rings true, because they so wanted to visit Rome to see particular things, but also to visit Europe generally. So they were always going off to other countries in Europe while they were in Rome, because I guess they all felt very close to them being based in Europe. And I sort of feel like sometimes we get the idea that you have to do residencies as an artist. I think I didn't really know what you were meant to do on a residency for a long time. I wondered if you did something like almost in a glass box, you'd be doing your work and people would be looking at you. I really had no idea what the expectations were. So maybe it's another thing that needs to be talked about more in art school. And this idea, Julie, that you talked about making sure that it is the thing that is going to be useful to you, and you're not just doing it because, you know, it's what you're expected to do, is really, really important.
And you can build your own residency.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's no reason why you can't just build your own residency.
Good idea. Yeah, through a man.
I just wanted to add, I agree about like researching what specific residency would make sense for your work, because sometimes there are collaborations between scientists and artists. So sometimes there are specific ones. The film equivalent of that for people working, you know, with video and film would be screenwriting labs. So a lot of film festivals run them. Sometimes you can get a grant to go on them. They're really amazing because it means you can develop a script there, you can get professional advice, and just means your project can get more exposure. So I would also recommend, you know, looking outside of just the art scene for people working with film.
That's a good good tip. And how you kind of mentioned at the beginning, Roman, that you're in this in-between position between the art world and between the film world. How does that work to your advantage, do you think, or does it make it difficult?
For now, yes, I get better grants in the art scene. But again, I'm still at an early stage. I think it's good, yeah, in terms of exposure, in terms of networking, in terms of like also being exposed to different, like rhetorics. I mean, sometimes there are different discourses that emerge in the film scene and the art scene. It just means that you're, I guess, part of like a bigger network, but yeah.
Got more to draw upon. You've got both kind of worlds there for you, which
especially in terms of funding.
I can appreciate that. I mean, I guess that sort of leads on to kind of talk about money in particular and selling work. I was thinking about, I mean, I guess there are two sides to this. Number one is artists being paid for commissions and for doing various works, but also the idea of selling work and how different that is if you're not working in kind of 2D media, I guess. The whole idea of paintings is that people are used to the idea of buying paintings or prints, but if it is a film or if you're working in performance or various other art forms, it does make it more difficult. So what have you got any kind of experience of that, Roman, or are you very much focusing on funding rather than selling?
I mean, just to go back to art school, again, this is not something that they don't prepare you for, especially if you're working in video, I guess, and performance in terms of how to price your work. I mean, personally, I feel weird about selling my video work and film work. Again, this might change in the future, but at the moment, I feel weird about selling it. I think I'd rather keep the copyrights to, you know, if people want to screen it, they can contact me. It means that I can and get as well like the screening fees. So I feel better about that kind of arrangement rather than selling my work. Again, because I'm at an early stage in my career, so this might change in the future. In terms of pricing work, I'll be honest with you, I myself don't know how to price videos and films. and I guess I haven't really reached that stage. And I think that's why maybe it's something I'm avoiding or not really engaging with at the moment.
So Julie, I know that AN are helpful on ideas about artist fees for things. How about pricing work, and I don't know, just more about artists making money? How do we figure out how much we should be paid?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that, because there are two different things: getting a fee and then actually sales. I'll do the sales bit first, because that's really important. And Raman is a very good example of not really knowing how to price her work. And also that happens as well, you know, across the board, even if you're, you know, even if you're making paintings or even if you're making other types of work. I was talking to a gallerist on Friday, and he'd been showing some emerging artists, and he felt it was really interesting how different approaches to a pricing work. And he said it generally fell into two approaches. They're either charging too much or too little, which made him actually then have to come in and advise, obviously, those artists that he was showing. But it is really important, because, you know, again, with Raman, just thinking about Raman's work, you know, Raman can hold an artist's proof and then edition the work. So edition the work, say five works, and always hold an artist's proof, which then can be used, as you say, for screening, getting screening fees. A lot of people don't think about those residual fees, actually, that should happen, you know, even once a work has sold. But also, I think what is really important is to work out, you know, where your practice fits in that fee guide, selling guide. We are going to do some work on pricing your work. So we've got a whole series of monthly artist drop-ins, and so we're going to do as part of that some market development drop-ins, you know, giving advice and getting in experts. But what is interesting is, you know, to think about really, you know, if you want to edition work, whether you want to license work, you know, DAX can give lots and lots of information around copyright and licensing. We can obviously give a lot of information about fees. And then in terms of the sales, how do you want to sell it? So again, you know, are you doing an edition? Are you selling it you know, as one piece? And yeah, so it's very complicated. It's not just as simple as like, oh, I'm going to pull out a sum and that's what I'm going to charge. And actually, you should think about all of those, you know, and as well, and if the image gets reused as well. So, you know, what we want to do with artists is put that package around to say, if you sell this work, you need to consider X, Y, Z, you know, licensing, copyright, and all of that. So it's very holistic. It's not just like actually painting. You need to charge X amount of money per square foot, you know, which actually that's what happens with painting.
Yeah.
And then I can talk a little bit more about artist fees as well.
Yeah, please do.
Which I think is probably quite important. So we ran something called the Paying Artist Campaign, because we did some research in 2014 that found out that 71% of artists didn't receive a fee for exhibiting in a publicly funded exhibition. So that is quite significant. Following on from that, we spent a further 2 years working with the sector, consulting artists. And what we also found out is if artists were being paid, they were often being paid late, working without a contract, or their fee became the contingency if the budget ran over. And actually, I saw something on Instagram only this weekend from We Industria, which actually was a quote from an artist saying that their fee got used for the contingency. And so what we developed was something called the Exhibition Payment Guide. It's there, it's on our website, it's downloadable for both institutions and artists. And it's a best practice model. And sitting alongside that, it's supported by an artist fees toolkit, so you can calculate your daily rate, and also a contracts toolkit, so contracts that you can download and use. We're due to update this work, but what we did pre-COVID was a whole bunch of focus groups on lots of different types of ways that art is made, from commissions through to things going into film festivals, etc. And so what we're looking at this year is we're going to do a good sweep through all of that. And I've actually been in touch with an artist this morning to check what he got paid for in terms of contributing to a book, because also, contributing to books it should be paid. And this can be anything from installing your work, running workshops, writing, etc. And so we're going to produce an artist fees payment guide. So it actually covers a lot more. So it will cover performance as well. And we're due to publish that probably early 2022, but it will be much more comprehensive. But in the interim, what I would advise artists to do is to go onto our website, use the daily rate calculator, use the contracts, but also become a member of AN, because we've got a legal and tax helpline now, which can also help.
That's great advice. And I mean, it's so good to have those practical tools available to us, because I think in terms, when you were talking about how artists price their work, I think it's so true that so many emerging artists or artists that have just left art school overprice their works. And then on the other hand, you have artists who maybe have been practicing for a while who underprice their works. I don't know. There's a very, very odd thing going on where there seems to be no rationale behind it. And artists do not understand the idea that if they price their works very highly, it's then very hard to drop your works, especially if you're selling work. You can't just suddenly, they just pick a figure out of the air often. So I get really mad, because I am one of those gallerists trying to work out why artists have decided at a certain price. The whole thing of galleries taking commission as well is all kind of complicated for artists. So it would be great to have more transparency. And I wonder if this whole pricing thing is not helped by the fact that most galleries are not at all transparent about how much artist work is being sold for, are they? If we think of the commercial sector, you very seldom will see prices next to work. And we know that's partly because the gallery will sell the work at different prices to different people, depending on how important they are. So there's all these sort of things going on, which do not make it easy to price your work. So all the help that there can be, I think, is really great. That's really useful.
Can I add as well, from my own experience with artist fees when it comes to production funds? A lot of artists end up paying for the production of work from their own fees, which is so sad, because often the production fees, don't cover everything. And I remember when I got the Gerwood FVU awards, when I first got it, I wanted to quit my job and just focus on the film. And then when I calculated my artist fees, the production production fund was for 10 months. And when I calculated my artist fees, it's the equivalent of having a one-day job for 10 months, which doesn't really cover, you know, the amount of time you spend on a commission or a certain production. So I think this is another question, like, does the artist fee actually cover the labor and the time that an artist actually spends on a commission or a production?
Yeah, I think often we're so pleased to have been awarded something and we're like, yes, it's £3,000 or whatever. But actually, when you break it down and think about the time that you need to spend, as you're saying, and it just doesn't always really make sense. Yeah, it feels like it needs to evolve more, the artist career path and the way that we're funded.
Go ahead, Julie. I do think it is evolving, but it requires artists to be able to say that. And let's be clear here, no organisation can pay under the minimum wage. It's not legal to pay under the minimum wage. That's why there is minimum wage legislation. And so it is, I in one of our focus groups, one of the artists was talking about an education program that they'd run, and they'd been given the fee to run it. And it was, I hadn't actually started at AN at that point. It was just before I started, and I was in the focus group just observing, really. I'd got the job, and in my head, I did a quick calculation, and I said, the organization has paid you under the minimum wage. You need to go back to them because that's not legal. And so I think it's artists just knowing very small things like that. And I think what we're here to do is to, you know, help and guide. I think the difference between AN and Raman did talk about unions is that we actually, and I think this is important to discuss actually in this conversation, where we support artists, so we support and advocate for artists. So we support artists being, in a sense, market ready, whether that market is running workshops, whether you're a maker, whether you're engaged in, you know, large scale commissions, etc. So we support artists with all the tools and all the information and resources needed for them to actually develop their creative practice, but understand the business side of being an artist. Where a union comes in is a union is able to represent you. So if you're in dispute in the workplace, then unions can represent you. And we work in partnership with Artists Union England. And also, it is important, those two distinctions. So if you were working for a gallery, maybe you had a contract, you know, it could be 1 month, it could be 6 months, it could be, you know, a year. And you found yourself in that position where you weren't being paid the, you know, the minimum wage, then firstly, you could ring, you know, if you're an AM member, you can ring our legal and tax helpline and they'll give you some free advice. But also, if you then get into dispute with that organisation, then that's where a union can come in and help. We do all the bit before that.
That's really great to define that, because I think that is something. Well, I don't think I was very clear about that, so that's really useful. I wonder if maybe you could say something about insurance as well, Julie, how important that is.
Well, it's really important. We actually ran a session with our insurers, ran a session for artists, because we can't advise on things like tax and insurance because we're not the experts. We engage other people to do that. But insurance is really important because it insures you to work. Actually, so our insurance, so for the £38 a year fee, it includes £10 million. It's public. I need to get this right or else
Is it public liability?
It's public and products liability and professional indemnity insurance. And basically, most good employers will ask you for this. So if you're being employed as a freelancer to maybe make a commission or to show work, to make an exhibition or to run workshops, they will ask you for this. And the reason that we've recently upped it to 10 million is local authorities and other government agencies that are big employers of artists on freelance basis will ask for this, and universities too will ask for this insurance. And more recently, they've been asking for it to be for 10 million cover rather than the old 5 million cover. So it's really important. And, you know, it's such a good deal. And if you're a recent graduate, so if you graduate this year, you can join for £19 and get that insurance as well. So if anything, if I'm doing the hard sell here, legal and tax helpline and insurance, very important.
It's worth it. Yeah.
And so the insurance is important because it means if you're doing workshops and you're covered in case anything happens in that workshop and someone's injured or something, or if one of your artworks
falls
on top of somebody, or I don't know, those kinds of terrible things that obviously we don't expect to happen, but you need to be prepared for. I think the insurance thing is such a great perk of being a member, definitely. So I wonder what you both think about promoting artists and social media, and how much time we should spend on that, if it's really important to promote ourselves that way. Maybe Roman, have you got any thoughts on that?
I mean, I have a website. That's normally a good start. It just means that people, you know, if they search for you or if you're applying for something, there's a place where your work is displayed and kind of categorized. So that's a good starting point. I have some online presence on Instagram, but I do it as myself rather than as a professional artist. I remember, like, a lot of people when we were graduating from the slate, they kind of cleared all their Instagram account and all of a sudden it became professional. So I don't know. I mean, people, I think, have different approaches. But it's important, of course, to promote your work whenever there's an event happening, to promote in advance. Again, I think joining collectives, I think, is really important because it means they can also promote your work on their platforms, on their pages. So that's how I see it, at least for now.
And what do you think, Julie? Have you got any thoughts about this?
Well, I mean, increasingly, the digital world has become more important. And what we are seeing, I mean, there's a whole bunch of graduates that are leaving this year and last year who have had to have online degree shows. And what we do know is that, you know, the hybrid exhibitions and that hybrid of digital and being able to go and visit is really here to stay. So I think it's really important that artists start to understand this. And I'm not saying that they need to create digital content. It's entirely up to them how they want to promote their work. But I think what is here to stay is this idea that partly your work will be in a digital sphere. And it always ends up in some kind of 2D format. In my day, you used to have to take photographs and make these slides. Slides. In fact, I've only just thrown them out.
Oh, no, don't throw them out.
Oh, well, I mean, it was so long ago. I mean, it's over 30 years ago. And I looked and I thought, really? Am I really keeping these? And I did. I just threw them away. We've always had to produce work in that 2D format for somebody else to see. But where it's become more important is, of course, in this digital sphere. And now everybody can see it. So I think you're right, Roman, you know, the idea of the website. I also advise through, you know, the talks that I do, for people to definitely close down, you know, if you've got personal accounts, to make sure that you privatize them and then have a professional account, say on Instagram, Facebook, or whatever platform you want to use. And also, I think they're a really good way of all social media platforms are a really good way of engaging people in your work. I mean, I think one of the great things that's came out of COVID, and let's face it, you know, in what was a terrible situation for artists were at the coal face, really. I mean, we found through our COVID-19 impact survey, you know, people lost all their work overnight. I mean, there's been this kind of beacon, really, which was the artist support pledge. And I know it favored a certain type of practice in a sense. But again, what that did is it created a very much a circular economy. I came across many more artists that I didn't know through going onto that hashtag. And also, you know, other people that I know were able to actually afford were able to buy work from artists. So I do think the digital and promotion of social media is really here to stay. And also thinking about your work in that hybrid realm where it might be in an exhibition, or for you, like Euroman, it may be that you have got a small clip that's on a website and things like that. And also, you know, make sure you get paid for all that additional content that you're providing for organizations. It's not just an exhibition payment fee now or a film festival screening payment fee. It's all that additional content. So I think it's really, really important. And, you know, many years ago when I first showed up at Liverpool Biennial, I did a talk with the associate artists and I said, which one of you is X? His name will remain forever. And you may want to edit this forever, you know, I'm not going to say the name. And, he put his hand up because I'd been in Australia for 4 years. So I didn't know, who he was. And, I said, I really don't need to know that your neighbors have very loud sex on Sunday mornings. Because when I looked him up, his Twitter account came up first. Because I was very diligent and I thought I should find out who these artists are and their practice before I talk to them. Mm. Anyway, you can chop that one if you want.
No, I think that's something to be aware of, that you know, maybe you don't need to create separate Instagram accounts. It depends what kind of things you post on your Instagram account, I guess, or your Twitter feed. But it is something to be aware of, that people will maybe be searching for your name and what the things are that they will come across and how that's going to influence their thoughts about you. Because I really agree with you, Roman. I think a website is such a useful thing because you have control over it and how you can say what you want to say on it and give the information you want to give. And it provides a way for people to, yeah, get that overview of your practice and contact you. So I don't know why more artists don't have decent websites, to be honest. So many people seem to set up a website and they're never ever updated or anything. And it's kind of simple to do it on lots of platforms now. So I think it's worth investing in.
I had that experience this morning. I looked up an artist's website and the CV hadn't been updated since 2016.
Yeah,
I'm currently selecting for a prize, so that was quite interesting.
Yeah,
luckily, I knew the artist, but I just wanted to check that they had done this particular exhibition that I knew that was really good. Because of course, I'm going into the judging panel tomorrow, and I want to make a case.
Yeah, that's a really good case in point. Artists, update your websites. Keep them up to date. I think maybe sometimes people think now that just Instagram is enough. But I know you can scroll back through it, but it's not the same as having that information on a website, I think. Yeah, very interesting things to consider. The artist support pledge as well, I think, was – I think that – one of the really useful things about it was so transparent. The thing I was talking about not knowing how much art costs, you could see how much things were, and it was easy to buy. And I think that was great for lots of people who were a bit nervous about approaching artists, maybe because they didn't know how much the work was. They had no idea. So it was really helpful. And hopefully those people who have started buying art might continue to do it, and it's developed a new sort of base of collectors. That's what I hope. So I wonder if there's anything else anybody wanted to mention that I haven't covered, because we're kind of getting towards the end. If not, I wanted to ask you both what you're actually working on at the moment, what's going on with your practice and your work, just so that we have an idea about what you're up to. So maybe I'll ask you first, Roman.
So I'm in research phase. I'm working on a documentary in development about a botanist in Iraq. So that's still in research phase. I'm doing the interviews. And what else? I have something coming up in Artwork magazine, a piece of writing that I did based on conversations with my mother to document, I guess, her experience of migration. And yeah, things are a little bit slow, I think, in my life. There's so much research going on at the moment, which I'm enjoying. I'm enjoying to kind of slow down and not feel this pressure to produce. I think it's really important sometimes to breathe a little bit.
So have those phases where you can take that time. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. And Julie, you mentioned judging something.
Yes, so actually tomorrow I am selecting for the Concord Art Prize, that's a completely new art prize. It's art and music. It was asking artists to respond to different tracks, basically anything from Pink Floyd through to Kret and Conan. So, really diverse selection of work to look at, which I did a lot of that work looking at it over the weekend, because it's in addition to what I do at AN. Mm. But in terms of AN, we're in the opposite phase of we're not slow. It's all suddenly accelerated, So we have, we've got our monthly artist drop-ins. We're in that. We've just, released our degree shows guide. And that's where we also promote and profile, recent graduates. So that happened last week. We're actually, still in our 40th anniversary year. So we are 40 years old and we're gearing up. So one of the things that we did, which was a really lovely idea from one of my team, was to actually do some anniversary issues of Artist Newsletter, but get artists now to actually guest edit them. So we're running up to the deadline for the next, so Artist Newsletter issue 3, and that is being guest edited by Shy Burns, a collective based in Manchester. So we're very excited about that. And we, as part of the 40th anniversary, we also interviewed 40 artists. So our next set of interviews go out as part alongside the newsletter. And then we'll do all of our usual things. As I've said, we're doing these monthly sessions. Last week I did a session on developing your creative practice. So that's applying to Arts Council's fund. And we are busy planning all of those September assembly and artist networks. So it is actually a really, really busy time. We're doing way more than that, but I should have made a huge list. And then I know that one of the questions we didn't tackle, but I just wanted to say a little bit about, which kind of links really to the Concord Art Prize, is one of the questions I know that you sent in advance, Kathy, was, is it a good idea to apply for competitions and awards?
Yes.
And I just wanted to say to artists that, yes, it is a good idea. However, the caveat on this is to be selective and do your research. Because where they're really great is they're really great for building up your CV or track record. And there are really good quality prizes and awards out there, such as the Jerwood Awards, you know, whether that's with FVU or the Photography Award, etc. But also, you know, John Moore's Painting Prize, New Contemporaries. And, you know, also weigh up what you, again, a bit like residencies, what you want to get out of it, because some are really good for the CV. Some are really brilliant because they're selling shows, and so you will sell work, you know. Some do both. But also the other advantage of actually making an application to either a competition or award is that you get in front of people that you wouldn't normally get in front of. So the majority of artists that I've looked at for the Concord Art Prize, I don't know. And I've been in this business a very long time. And as you know, Kathy, when I was at Arts Council England, I have literally looked at thousands and thousands of applications and seen so much work. And so really, really refreshing. So you see new work, and so will my fellow selectors. We'll see new work, new proposals from artists that they don't know. And the ones that, you know, a lot of that will stick. And and I'm likely tomorrow to put forward the majority of the selection that I'm putting forward. I don't know the artist. And that's just come through somebody making a proposal.
Yeah, that's so great to hear. And I think that's such, it's good advice about entering competitions, but I agree. Whenever I've done anything where I've judged or I'm selecting people for exhibitions, it isn't about people I know. Maybe you might think of people because you've seen their work, but it's so great to see new artists' work. And if they don't apply for things, and if they're not sort of out there doing things, you're not going to know about them, are you? So I think that's a great ending point for this discussion. Thank you so much, both of you. It's been really great. I think loads of interesting tips and bits of advice and anecdotes there. So hopefully it'll be useful to people. Thank you.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
Out of Space is a podcast series produced by Space, London's largest artist studios provider. To learn more about the artists taking part and for further resources, please visit the What's On section of Space's website at www.spacestudios.org.